Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat with Otto. Let me go to the Middle East, and then I'm going to comment on a, what would we call him, a late-night show? A guy who does a late-night show, John Oliver, has talked about the Middle East, and I'm simply going to use his monologue on the Middle East by way of answering a lot of the attacks on Israel. But I will just say at the outset, it is a bit depressing, and it always has been in my life, the inability of so many people in the world to recognize evil, to not understand that Hamas embodies evil, is to truly have what we call a broken moral compass. And it's not new. A lot of people did not understand the evil that the Nazis presented. Most people did not understand the evil that the communists represented. Even to today, people will frequently take umbrage at calling communism evil. The fact that it killed 100 million people, civilians, not wartime deaths, civilians, means nothing. As Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, a million is a statistic. He should know he killed 20 to 40 million of his own people. I have long ago, this was the first big moral realization of my life, I think, either high school or college, when I said it is wrong to call evil dark. Evil is actually very bright. You can look into the dark, but you cannot look into very bright light. People do not stare at evil. They recoil from acknowledging it. In the struggle between Hamas and Israel, to not understand that we're talking about darkness and light with all the flaws that Israel, as any country, would have, it is light compared to the darkness of Hamas. To not understand that, this totalitarian, theocratic dictatorship tortures its own opponents. Its own Palestinian opponents are tortured to death regularly. There are no freedoms in Gaza. Hamas took over Gaza when Israel left. Israel occupied Gaza, and the whole world said, leave, leave, and then you will see how things will work out. And they did see how things will work out. Horrible human beings sending thousands of rockets to kill as many Israelis as possible followed the Israel leaving of Gaza. So imagine if Israel left the West Bank. What would happen? You just have another Hamas-run place to try to destroy Israel. One final point. This is not a normal war. This is not a normal antipathy. The opponents of Israel do not want to defeat Israel. They want to destroy Israel. That's a big difference. There are 22 Arab states, but there's no room for one Jewish one the size of New Jersey. There are 50-something Muslim countries, but there's no room in the world for one tiny Jewish country the size of New Jersey. Just think about that for a moment. Okay? Now let's go to John Oliver, who is on HBO. I was not familiar with him until Megan brought this to my attention, and I'm glad that she did. And my column this week is a perfect, he is a living embodiment of it. The title of my column this week, which is easily found on my website, Town Hall, Daily Wire, American Greatness, and many other sites. And Real Clear Politics picked it up, which is not a conservative site. They take what they think are the most important left and right articles. Anyway, it's certainly all over the internet, and it's titled, if I can remember it correctly, Men Give Birth, America Was Founded in 1619, and Israel is the aggressor. That is what the left's upside-down world would have you believe, those three things. And isn't it amazing that all those who say men give birth, virtually anyone who does, also thinks Israel is wrong? That goes, it so follows a pattern, isn't it? Fascinating. And Israel is the aggressor is as true as men give birth. By the way, the left would agree. That's the irony. It's one of the few things we'd all agree on. All right, let's take a look at John Oliver here, and I will interrupt to make some comments.
The citizens of Gaza don't have an Iron Dome to protect them the way that the citizens of Israel do. It's one of the many ways they're at a significant disadvantage. Although,
and it's... Well, all right, wait. Therefore what? Notice there is no question about the... Already we have literally demoralized the whole situation. The citizens of Gaza don't have an Iron Dome to protect them. To protect them against what? Is Israel shooting rockets all over Gaza, like Hamas is doing to Israel, thousands? Did Israel start the war or did Hamas start the war? You know what? Hitler's Germany didn't have nearly the same defenses to defend Germany as Britain had to defend Britain by the end of World War II. Does that make Hitler a victim? Does that make the Nazis victims? Would he prefer that Israel not have an Iron Dome? And then what? So, in other words, this is part of the left-wing demoralization of morality, that the weak are necessarily in the right. It's truly pathologic.
An Israeli military spokesperson tried to push back on the idea that there's really much of a discrepancy there.
Somebody on Twitter said that the Palestinians don't have an Iron Dome. I say, yes, they have an Iron Dome. It's called Don't Fire Rockets at Israeli Civilians, and we won't fire anything at Gaza.
That was brilliant. That's exactly right. Their Iron Dome is Don't Kill Us. That's exactly right. This spokesman, and he's going to make fun of it, I assume, otherwise he wouldn't have put it up. That spokesman for Israel, it was so real. The left loathes the real. It's a dissection of reality. Yes, they have an Iron Dome. Don't try to slaughter us. Make peace with us. That's their Iron Dome. Then everything is possible. Here's a question, the only question one has to reflect on. If Israel dropped its arms completely, it just demilitarized, no more army, no more navy, no more air force, no more use of arms, what would happen the next day? And if the Palestinians, no more fighting, no more terror, no more rockets, no more arms, what would happen the next day in that case? Well, we know. If Israel did it, the next day there would be genocide of the Jewish people of Israel. Whereas if the Palestinians demilitarized, there would be peace the next day in the Middle East. That's what everyone who dares look at reality knows. Israel has no interest in war. Whenever there has been a war in the last 100 years, it has always been between two police states or between a police state and a free state, never between two free states. They don't fight each other. And whenever there is a free state police state battle, the police state started the battle, whether it was Pearl Harbor or the Nazi invasion of Poland, or what is happening now with Hamas.
Yeah, but there are a couple of differences. Iron Dome, for one, sounds much cooler. And also, it has the significant advantage...
Wait, what does that even mean? Iron Dome sounds cooler than what? He talks well and fast, but he doesn't say anything meaningful. Okay, we'll continue.
Defense system that exists, unlike Gaza's, which is mostly try not to be where the bombs are landing. And it's important to note here, the vast majority of the Palestinians in Gaza are not part of Hamas.
Okay, so what? Nothing here says matters. The vast majority of Germans were not Nazis. The vast majority of Russians were not communists. So what? It's a meaningless point. Anyway, how does he know what the vast majority of people in Gaza, they didn't vote for Hamas? I don't know. Maybe they didn't. I'm sure the elections are rigged. But maybe they did. How does he know? But the fact that they're not members of Hamas, to the extent that that is true, so what? It's true for every police state.
They don't get together and all decide to launch rockets. It's not a co-op board. But when Israel fires rockets...
Right, it's not a co-op board. Right. So the average Palestinian is opposed to what Hamas is doing? Does he know? I don't know. Maybe they are. But how does he know? Would he willingly make a bet if there was an actual free election? Do you think that Hamas should try to destroy Israel or not? What the vote would be? I don't know what the vote would be. How does he know?
When Israel fires rockets at Gaza, it endangers all Palestinians there. Maybe somebody on Twitter could point that out to that guy.
Point what out to that guy? Point what out? I'm dissecting it almost sentence by sentence. I still don't point what out. What the guy said is correct. Their Iron Dome is peace. He didn't respond at all to what the IDF, the Israel Defense Force spokesman, said.
To people in Gaza, it can seem like the only time anyone pays attention to what's happening there is when Hamas is firing rockets, which is understandably very frustrating because they've been living under a suffocating blockade.
You know why they're living under a suffocating blockade? Because they want to bring in missiles from Iran to destroy Israel. That's why there's a blockade. If there were no blockade, what do you think would come into Gaza? Girl Scout cookies? Checker games? What do you think would come in? Everything he has said is nonsense. But here's the deal. Let's debate. John Oliver, I publicly invite you. I am always polite in debates. I will give $1,000 to your favorite medical charity. Debate anywhere in the country, providing it is both televised on your show and it is broadcast on my show. How is that? Is that a good deal? You think he'll accept, ladies and gentlemen? The left never debates. So I predict a no. I predict no answer. But for those of you who are curious, gee, who's right? Here's a chance to have a debate. They could have any moderator they want.
And in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, Palestinians are essentially being governed by a form of apartheid.
Apartheid? What does it mean, a form of apartheid? Do Arab Israelis not have the same rights as Jewish Israelis? If he's saying that, he's lying. That's a big charge to say someone is lying. Not mistaken, it's a lie. As for the West Bank, that's true. It is governed. That is correct. It is governed by Israel because when Jordan owned it in 1967, it tried to destroy Israel and Israel didn't let itself be destroyed. So it took over the West Bank and was very happy to return the West Bank. But the Arabs said in 1967, they went to Khartoum and they announced no negotiations, no peace, no recognition. What was Israel supposed to do?
An assessment echoed by both international and Israeli human rights groups.
Oh, human rights groups. Oh, they have a record of tremendous moral acuity.
Life in Gaza is hard even when they are not being bombed. And the US government has implicitly co-signed on the brutally hard line Israel's been taking.
Okay, the US has co-signed. When the US supported Israel for the 4 years of Donald Trump, this didn't happen. I'm not saying it is definitely a result of the election of the Democrats in the United States, but it's hard to believe it is not related that within a few months of Joe Biden becoming president, the wars began again. While Donald Trump was president, the fact is Arab state after Arab state actually recognized Israel. It was a remarkable thing from Morocco to Dubai. It was quite remarkable, even Sudan. Now we have war. You know why? Weakness invites war. Strength invites peace. That's real life. Is it nice? The question isn't, is it nice? The question is it true?
This guy basically gave Israel a green light to do anything it wanted for the last 4 years. And while Biden has had the opportunity to reset that relationship, his administration's response this week has been deeply underwhelming, giving a generic statement that Israel has a right to defend itself.
Why is that underwhelming? What is Israel supposed to do? He never once, no one on the left who loathes Israel has been able to offer an alternative to what Israel is doing. What would you like Israel to do? The attempt to obliterate, to murder, to slaughter, to burn as many Jews as possible in Israel is being taken. The Iron Dome is stopping most of it. What would you like Israel to do? They never say. What should Israel do? This is disproportionate. What's a proportionate response? If only 10 Israeli dies, do they make sure that only 10 Palestinians die? What should Israel do? What would America do? What would any country do if there was an enemy that tried to obliterate its population?
Exact same line that Obama said and that Bush said before him. Israel has a right to defend itself. It's just something all presidents end up saying out loud at some point in office, like my fellow Americans, or what do you mean?
Right. So it's meaningless. Israel has a right to defend itself is a meaningless phrase to this moral giant.
It's not that Israel doesn't have the right to defend itself. It's just that line cannot be used to excuse absolutely everything.
Okay. What again? What is inexcusable?
Multiple children have been killed this
week. Yes, children are killed. That's correct. How could Israel avoid killing children when they are in the same building with Hamas people? What is Israel to do? The Israeli army is known as the most meticulous in avoiding killing civilians in the world. Watch the video. It was tweeted out by Israel's prime minister, the Prager University video. Take a look at it. The PragerU video on Israel is the most moral army in the world. It is given by a British colonel, the head of British, the commander of British forces in Afghanistan, who's fought all over the world. And this man, a commander in a colonel in the British army, said that the most moral army in the world is Israel's. But children die. You know how many children died when the Allies bombed Nazi Germany? If he were alive then, he would have spoken about how evil America and Britain were for bombing Germany. Yes, we'll just allow the Holocaust to go on a little longer, but we won't bomb Germany.
8 in a single strike just yesterday, and the US is heavily implicated here. Not just by serving as Israel's diplomatic shield at the UN, but by constantly refusing to criticize the indefensible.
What was indefensible? That's what I'd like to know. That children die? How do you retaliate with no children dying when Hamas uses children as shields? That is their tactic. That is their tactic. What is Israel supposed to do? He doesn't even mention that.
You know, the Israelis killed 13 people just
Pretty
now.
Pretty simple question.
You know, including maybe 5 or 6 children. Do you condemn that? Do you condemn the killing of children?
Okay, do you condemn the killing of children? The deliberate killing of children is evil. The non-deliberate killing of children in a war is a tragedy. It's a demagogic question. Do you condemn the killing of children? Does this man think, a U.S. spokesman thinks it's okay to kill children? The demagoguery of this is, you can choke on it. Is Israel targeting children? Or is Hamas placing children in a place so they could die? Hamas, I truly believe, Hamas doesn't give a damn about the children of Gaza. They use them so that they can have John Olivers of the world attack Israel. The greatest ally of Hamas is the world media, including John Oliver. If anybody is enabling these things to happen, it is the world's left. If they knew that the world media was not pro-Hamas, was not anti-Israel as much as it is, they would not embark on these things. They don't gain anything militarily. What they want to do is give Israel as terrible a name as possible. And the John Olivers of the world are the useful idiots, as they used to call the people who somehow saw moral equivalence between America and the Soviet Union. God must love these people. He's made a lot of them.
I'm asking, do you condemn the killing of Palestinian children?
Obviously, and these reports are just emerging, and I understand, I was just speaking to the team, I understand we don't have independent confirmation of facts on the ground yet, so I'm very hesitant to get into reports that are just emerging.
All he needed to say was, I condemn the use of children as human shields. Okay? That's the reality. And then say, do you, sir? How about throwing it back at this pompous guy with the mask on? Do you condemn the use of children as human shields? Okay.
I know how this looks, but trust me, it is complicated. Look, there is a real tendency, particularly in America, to both sides this situation, and I'm not saying that there aren't some areas where that's warranted, but it's important to recognize there are also areas where it's simply not.
It is not an issue of both sides are equally right or equally wrong. We both agree with that. He thinks Israel is the villain. I think Hamas is the villain. Nothing like moral clarity or clarity in general. You know my motto, clarity over agreement. This one is perfect. We have clarity and agreement. We both think one side is wrong. He thinks it's the Israeli democracy. I think it's the Hamas totalitarians. The people who started the war are wrong.
Both sides are firing rockets, but one side has one of the most advanced militaries in the world. Both sides are suffering heartbreaking casualties, but one side is suffering them exponentially.
That's right, they are. Because they started. Germans suffered exponentially. Far more civilian losses in Germany than in Britain, let alone in America, where there were virtually none. This is how the left calculates right and wrong. How many died? Because their moral compass is just broken.
And it's not like the US is operating from the moral high ground here. It's obviously no stranger to drone striking weddings and saying, we were just trying to target enemy combatants. This country has blood on its hands too. And look, if you believe Israel's actions are warranted and proportionate this week, you're welcome to try and make that argument. But we have got to start having this conversation honestly.
Let's have a debate. You're prominent, I'm prominent. I have a larger audience than you, but you have a large audience, but I'm willing to expose you to my millions of listeners and to all those who watch these PragerU videos. So I'm going to give you a much larger audience than you'll give me, and yet I'm willing to do it because you invited honest dialogue. Okay, enough of that.
Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenager in Wisconsin who shot three men, killing two and severely injuring the third, made his final pre-trial hearing today, and with a in-person appearance for the first time ever in Wisconsin courts, he appeared in person, but it was the final pre-trial hearing leading up to the eventual trial, which will happen sometime in November. This is a largely uneventful hearing with scheduling being worked out, some motion deadlines and stuff that we will go through, but it was a hearing in which he appeared, which was an opportunity for the media to repeat their opinions about this case as factual. And I'm here to talk about those opinions and to give you my opinion. Although, as you know, because of integrity, what I'm reporting on is my opinion about these events, my opinions about the legal case that is coming, my opinions about Kyle Rittenhouse's defenses to the alleged crimes. I'm not reporting to you as if this is all set in stone. I'm giving you my legal opinions and my personal opinions based on my experience and my biases. Biases which are pretty openly towards Kyle in this case. Now, let's jump in and see what the media is saying, and then we'll give our bits at the end of that. I'm Nick Riccata of Riccata Law, a small law firm in central Minnesota. I'm a lawyer. I'm also a legal and political commentator on YouTube and on Odyssey. So wherever you're watching, make sure you hit the subscribe button, make sure you like the video, share it around so people know what's going on and get kind of an accurate idea of these major events. Okay, here we go. I've covered the Kyle Rittenhouse situation pretty extensively. I've got a playlist that you can find in the top right corner of this video, somewhere up here. And you can find that playlist and it'll have a bunch of different videos on the subject, on various aspects of the case. This one is going to be more focused on how the media is still treating this case. They are bloodthirsty for another trial, and specifically, I would humbly suggest a trial they plan to influence as much as possible, and certainly to sway public opinion to fit their own narratives. This is from ABC News. The article will be linked down in the description below. You can go ahead and click on it if you want, but I think you'll get an idea of the slant of this article from the tone right here. In the headline, it starts, Kyle Rittenhouse, Illinois teen who allegedly killed two protesters, makes first in-person court appearance. He allegedly shot marchers during August 25th protests in Kenosha, Wisconsin. These were not protesters and marchers. They were assailants. All three of the people that Kyle Rittenhouse shot were in the process of assaulting him. The question isn't even whether or not they were assaulting him. The question is whether the assaults and the response were justified under Wisconsin law. Whether Kyle provoked the assault, I will maintain in no way do we have any evidence that he provoked an assault that would get rid of his ability to defend himself. Believe it or not, you are not condemned to death even if you do provoke an assault. We'll get into that in a minute, but I don't believe he even provoked the assault based on any evidence I've seen. But then the next question is his response in using deadly force justifiable based on the assault that was occurring? He was chased down by all three of the assailants. The first one did not quite reach him. The second one actually did strike him with a skateboard after he had fallen down. And then the third one, did what would be considered a war crime. He faked a sort of surrender. He said, whoa, 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 and acted like he was there to help Kyle, and then immediately pulls his gun and Kyle ended up shooting him in the arm. That is the person who survived. So all three of these people were engaged in assaulting Kyle Rittenhouse during this encounter. They are no longer protesters and marchers at that time, in my humble opinion. But let's go on and see what's going on here. Kyle Rittenhouse, the Illinois man accused of killing two people during protests decrying the police shooting of Jacob Blake. By the way, that shooting was fully justified. A man committing multiple felonies who also had just had an altercation with police picks up a knife, refuses lawful orders, enters a vehicle with children in the back that he was taking without permission, in a vehicle that he did not own and was taking without permission as well. He was shot. Yes, that was a justified shooting. It's been shown on the body camera footage and in other footage just how justified it was, but they were still protesting it. He made his first in-person court appearance on Friday. It was increased security for the 18-year-old's brief final pretrial hearing. It was his first time in person, as most of his legal proceedings during the pandemic have been virtual. Attorneys and prosecutors went over scheduling details in anticipation of Rittenhouse's November trial. They agreed on a deadline for motions on July 1st, and this will be very interesting. Seeing the motions that are going to come out, hopefully we will get dispositive motions moving for dismissal of all claims, but in particular, the claim that he is in unlawful possession of a firearm as a minor. As I have covered in another video, the law specifically exempts 16 and 17-year-olds from that provision when they are carrying a standard length barrel length shotgun or long rifle, which all of the evidence, all of the reports indicate that he was using a standard AR-15 style rifle with a standard barrel length. There is no sort of indication that he was using a short barreled rifle at the time, and thus that statute should not apply to him based on the plain reading of the text. So it'll be interesting to see if his defense team mounts a pretrial opposition to that in a motion, or if they decide to just take it to the jury. We will see by July 1st. Jury questionnaires by August 1st, and the next motion hearing set for September 17th. So that would be when, presumably, when those July 1st motions have been submitted, responded to, and then subsequently replied to. After that, the motion hearing on those motions would be September 17th. Lawyers on both sides said the trial will take about 2 weeks. Online court records Friday revealed Rittenhouse retained another attorney in the case, Corey Kirafisi. Rittenhouse was 17 when he left his hometown of Antioch, Illinois for nearby Kenosha, Wisconsin, 21 miles away, and allegedly shot and killed two protesters and wounded a third on August 25th. Leaving out the fact that he worked in Kenosha and was already there, he didn't have to leave his house to attend the protest because he was already in town following his work schedule. But the protests erupted after police shot Blake, a 21-year-old black father, in the back, and he was left paralyzed from the waist down. Listen to how they frame this. It's insanity. The news has just gone full on into denying reality. Jacob Blake, yes, was a 29-year-old black father, was taking the children and a car without permission, literally fought with police, refused tasers, refused a lawful order. After fighting with police, picked up the knife that he dropped while fighting with police, continued to refuse the lawful order, walked around, entered a vehicle. Look, when you're being detained by police officers and you attempt to enter a vehicle, the vehicle itself becomes a deadly weapon, and he may have had further deadly weapons in the vehicle. The police officers do not know. The reporting on this has been so abysmally bad, and these people have been fueling these sort of riot responses to these encounters. I mean, the Jacob Blake is one of the most clearly justifiable shootings you can find. Shooting him in the back. He was getting into the car. They're shooting him last second as he's getting into the car after attempting several times to just go ahead and arrest him. By the way, he also had a felony warrant. I mean, we can ignore that too. Rittenhouse and his attorneys have argued that he went to Kenosha to protect businesses amid the protests. Photos and video from the protest showed Rittenhouse carrying an assault-style rifle. What even is an assault-style rifle? This is a news story. It's an AR-15-style rifle, which stands for Armalite, not assault rifle, as the news seems to be unable to figure out. But an AR-15-style, it means the chassis of the rifle, is styled after a very popular type. He is charged with first-degree reckless homicide, first-degree intentional homicide, and first-degree recklessly endangering safety in the fatal shootings of Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber during the August protests in Kenosha. He is also charged with attempted reckless homicide in a shooting that same night that left protester Gage Grosskreutz severely wounded. That's the guy who pretended to like, hell, whoa, no, I'm fine, and then drew his gun to literally kill Kyle while he's on the ground. Again, extremely justified self-defense shooting there, but whatever. Rittenhouse's attorneys have said the teenager was acting in self-defense when he allegedly shot all three men, citing multiple cell phone videos that they say show him being chased and attacked by protesters. According to a criminal complaint filed by prosecutors in the case, Grosskreutz allegedly moved towards Rittenhouse after putting his hands in the air and appeared to be holding a handgun in his right hand when he was shot. He didn't appear to be. He was holding a handgun. In the videos prosecutors presented at the preliminary hearing, Rosenbaum appeared to be chasing Rittenhouse and throwing something at him when he was shot, and Huber appeared to hit Rittenhouse with a skateboard. Jury selection for the trial is scheduled to begin November 1st. If convicted, he faces life in prison. Rittenhouse was released on $2 million bail raised by political conservatives who backed his stance against anti-police protesters. No, it's raised by people who go, this is injustice. This person shouldn't even be charged. He was clearly acting in self-defense. When you read the complaint from the state of Wisconsin, it reads like someone defending themselves. The entire trial is a sham. It's a political move. It's a political prosecution. The media has been complicit in it. It's absolutely ridiculous that they can keep running with this narrative and that they continue to run with it. That, oh, conservatives who are happy that he shot protesters. Literally not the case. It's people who perceive the injustice of what is being done to him, raising the money and saying, $2 million bail? This guy acted in self-defense, clearly in self-defense. Every video, it looks like self-defense. You can't find a video where he's provoking anyone. You can't find a video where he's acting as an aggressor. The videos open with him retreating from the person trying to do him harm. He doesn't even have a duty to retreat in Wisconsin, and he still retreats first. The first thing he does is try to run away, try to get away from the conflict. He only shoots Rosenbaum when he's no longer able to get away. Something he had no duty to even attempt, but did anyway. This is most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Kyle has a clear case of self-defense. Whether or not that case will be successful at trial is something to remains to be seen. I have not seen any compelling evidence that would negate his ability to plead self-defense successfully in this case. In all of the charges, of course, I've covered extensively the minor carrying a handgun charge does not apply, according to the language of the statute, to a long-barreled rifle or a long-barreled shotgun. It would apply to a handgun, a sawed-off shotgun, a short-barrel rifle, something like that. Yes, but not to a long-barreled rifle. So we'll have to see how that ends up working out. But that being said, I don't know, man. This is an opportunity for the media to expound upon their propagandized version of the events. And I mean, all of them surrounding Jacob Blake, extremely propagandized and biased reporting on this justified shooting of Jacob Blake. And then further, extremely biased and propagandized reporting on Kyle Rittenhouse's situation. And they should be embarrassed about this. But I wanted to bring you the updates. July 1st will be a really interesting date because we should see those motions come into play and we'll get to see what the defense's strategy is. And then sometime around September, we'll get to see how that works out. So we'll be watching, as always. If you're not familiar with all of the videos I've done in this case, make sure you catch the playlist that's linked at the end so that you can keep up on all of my legal and political musings on this particular case. It is a fascinating one, and it will really set the tone for how self-defense works in Wisconsin, for how juries play out in these sort of incidences, and how the media can shape public opinion and potentially even prejudice defendants in these types of cases. So, until next time, have a good day. Peace.